Mr. Whitaker, Reel 16. We're talking about after Tobruk, Christmas at Timoney, and yes. You were mentioning how they were trying to supplement the rations and get a good Christmas.
Yes. Eventually, I didn't go there, but the truth is, Major Burke had left me pretty much to amuse myself. He went off hunting and they begged for it or stole some, I think, fowls or something. They got some, like, rotten rot from some Bedouin they met, bartered something, and we did manage to get something to eat. They also brought back a barrel of the most, but this time I must admit I liked that drink, and I wasn't averse. We tried bottles of Italian wine that had been found, which were warned not to, but in case they were poisonous. They brought this back, and it was like, I think if you'd have tried it, it'd probably have been very successful. Hence, someone told me it was undiluted cognac, and quite frankly, even with a few spots and fill your mug up with water, it was to me it was undrinkable. Some of them managed to get it down. All the men we did finish up, we had got a load of flour. We finished up. I can remember on Christmas we finished up in the evening. Fires going all over the place, loads of blackout, cooking flapjacks, flour and water on a piece of tin over the fire. We did go scrounging around the area, where I found various Africa Corps cap badges, which I've since lost, which to my disgust. I had actually carried them, but I don't know where I brought them.
You were keen on the idea of souvenirs.
Well, you know, it was just a thing to do. We also picked up some German rifles, the famous Mauser, which we'd heard a lot about. We tried those out and found they'd got the most awful kick. People finished it with bruised shoulders. But there wasn't much to find. Most of the stuff they'd taken. So we did find this place. Mainly they were some sort of pith helmet with these little metal badges on each side. One thing with the famous palm tree and swastika, and the other the German eagle, which they put on the soccer, which were collected. And as I say, but there wasn't very much. Eventually, they did let us go back. We handed all our stuff over to someone.
All the guns.
We handed everything. Even transport, they more or less they put it on transport, and back we went, which was a great relief. It had all become a real farce. You know, the battle had gone long ago, and we weren't attached to anybody. And quite frankly, I think we'd had enough. After, you know, with Tobruk, there'd always been an aim. We were going to get out. We were going to win this battle, and then we had to. And there were, and I know Major Burton, when he was talking to me, he said it was time we went. You know, he was, as I say, but then we'd become, you know, the Major was a new chapter, and I talked to him. And then we'd come. He was a funny chap. I think we talked around his homosexuality. I made it quite clear, exaggerating as much as I could, you know, how much I might live and couldn't wait to get back to the bottoms of Cairo. Lying, I wouldn't have dared. But so we skirted around it.
What did you talk about?
Everything he used to talk about is school. One thing he was used to reminisce in the 1930s, the Birkin family, they were a well known county family, and the Prince of Wales at that time, Edward VIII, Prince of Wales, he one of his many ladies was a Birkin. So so he knew him quite well. And he bought this farm at Nottingham, they called the Prince of Wales Farm, which he used to visit. But his real purpose, the Prince, was to answer this on the Birkin language. So he used to reminisce about him, what a lad he was, you know, and all that. And I asked him, he had a very famous relative, Sir Henry Birkin, who raced bankers at Le Mans. And I just asked him about him, and he knew it.
What would he call you? I mean, would you be Ted or would you be Whittaker?
Yeah. Occasionally, if you wanted something to call me, you know, if there's nobody about, he said, Ted, look here, I don't want anybody to see. I think one of the things I took back, you know, was all his recommendations to give a young medal after to Brooke, because I had to take that to some very high-ranking man. But it was mostly Whittaker.
And you,
if somebody else was there, he'd call him Bombardier. But usually it was, you know, we're all on the, like his public school colours, it was, and we call him Sir Peter when he wasn't there, or Old Pete. And in case it was
called him. You'd call him Peter when he wasn't there.
And that was not so, if we thought he was, you know, taking us on unnecessary journeys. But yes, you can talk about anything and everything, he'd ask you about, he was very keen to know your families and what you were interested in. And, you used to chat, as I say, it was quite, gave you quite an insight onto how the other half lived, because, as I say, there were a county family. And and occasionally, of course, the colonel would come along and chat to him, and he didn't chat without, if they wanted to, they'd stroll away. But quite often the colonel would come and chat, and they'd include in the conversation. You know, they'd better make the odd joke even about, you know. And, as I say, we'd become quite a good, although I say so, I think we'd become quite a good team.
And what did you think of Seeley?
I think he could call him a gentleman. At one time I had drawn a cartoon of him, it was just a little dog. Excuse me, he picked up from somewhere, and I did draw a cartoon with him with a little dog, where it said, he can't make up his mind whether he's the master of foxhounds, the colonel, or the master of the South Knots hounds, or the master of the South Knots as well. But he'd seen that in the other side. But he was like the major, was very, I was listening to him, which he didn't often, but occasionally, he was always very much for the South Knots as well, wanting to get the best for them.
Were you a bit battle weary, do you think, after all this time?
I think so. Reaction had set in. You'd had all this, you know, the stook of the air, and then you broke out, and it's all finished. You know.
Did you find yourself getting more nervous, or did you get more used to it?
You were used to it, but you were thankful. It was nice if you could understand. It was nice when it had finished. And sometimes. I used to wonder occasionally, will it be all right? Will it be all right in the morning? If something happens tomorrow, I found that I could do a job while people were shooting at me. Which I once told one of our young managers when we were on the training course. And he said, "What would you expect if I was the manager?" He said, "If you were the manager, what would you expect your men to do?" I said to him. The job when somebody is shooting at them, which I had to sort of put it, that was what I found I could do, which I must admit I was quite relieved.
Now from Timoney they'd gone back to Tobruk.
We went back.
And then Peter Birkin took a bunch of men back to Cairo for a special leave.
I didn't go with that lot. He didn't accord me that privilege. He was going to find out what was happening. A bunch of them went off. we went back with the main party for degrees. We got the most notable event, I think, New Year's Eve, we were outside Bardia, which was still, it was being bombed on New Year's Eve, in fact, for a bit. There was still fire around there, but the Black Watch, they were travelling alongside us, and they lit fires. It was New Year's Eve, you see. I mean, Scotsmen celebrate New Year's Eve. And some of them did come across, and we did have the odd top of whiskey with them. But there was nobody I knew from the Black Watch. We'd never got, all I'd ever seen really was the colonel and one or two sergeants who'd come along while we were at Tiger. But they did come along, and I know we were on the outskirts of this camp. We were nearest to them, or a bunch of us, and we did get the older, the tot of whiskey, Auld Lang Syne. And after that, of course, it was down to the railhead, which for that time, when we left, the railhead was Rosam True. But now it was up just short of the Libyan border. So I went down the famous, I don't think we went down the pass, we went down south of the railhead and the way. And when it was the RSC because one of them had become very interested in why I was carrying a Tommy gun, which I had carried, we carried a personal weapons. I've got a Tommy gun and a rifle. And this RSC offered to buy it from me. And I said, what? I said, I'd get shot, with these personal weapons. He said, oh, well, we have to take stuff up. Occasionally they had to go and supply people who were out in the desert, and they were a bit windy about letting them jump. When I came to load the stuff on the train, the Tommy gun had gone. And I'd got a whole kit bag full of .45 ammunition, so I left that. Too heavy to get. We got on the train and went to our old stamping ground to Hag, where we were given leave. And
now at Ta Hag, there's quite a bit about you were able to get into Cairo and build yourselves up and have a good time. Do you remember much about that? I mean,
leaving Cairo, I remember everybody was hopping mad because they gave us 7 days, and most of the other units and all of them gave them 14. But it wasn't bad. We didn't have, they had no particular duties. Started playing hockey. And the officers hijacked that because there were nurses. There was a big South African hospital that had nurses. So they started playing mixed hockey, and the genuine hockey players, it became the all officers. So one of 426 senior sergeants, Sid Giles, he outwitted them. He fought the Nottingham Exiles, and the team was the only eligible to play if you play for a Nottingham team. So I got in there, and we played hockey. One thing they did, we had one of our memorable parties. Colonel Seely arranged this. We took over the Nappy.
Now, this was a sort of delayed Christmas party,
really,
wasn't it?
Delayed Christmas, and this was part of the... And Major Birkin, our party, he said, one of my rewards for not flinching during jaundice and other things, he put me behind the bar, which was all free. I must say that was a fatal mistake in those days, but it was like that. Peter was a rugby player, led the whole, everybody who could still stand in all the old rugby songs, filthy rugby songs, and it was a part and a half. Really, I don't think half of us ever got back to a tent that night. It was laid down, sleeping, but it really was a riot. All the drinks were free, turkey, mince pie, plum pudding. The colonel and the ladies, they paid for the
That's the ladies' committee.
The ladies' committee.
Now, it was a mixed rank party then. Everybody was in the same room.
Well, it was one of these. You know, the officers, and I got the second stripe. They gave me the second stripe when I got down to that camp. Very memorable occasion. Somebody had just, I think the lady just said to me, "Oh, you may as well put your other stripe up today," and that was all lost to it. But I did, although I should have been served, I had to help. You know, it was officers serving the men, and then they went off. But in the evening, it was everybody, it was all lads together. So it was a riot.
And what
everybody who was sober was built. It ought to have been court martialed, or I still think that. It was what I can remember. But it.
What about next day with the hangovers?
I can't remember the next day or two. But as I say, we got leave, I went. But then I've got good friends, not with the people who I joined up with. A father from Tollerton, father's son Jeff Chambers, Frank Bush. One of the high school lads, but not quite. He wasn't good at Westgate crew, because his father was in Italy with Count Castillo. Leave to Cairo, which for them we got to know would be before, of course. And boozing, going to the pictures, very enjoyable. And then we went to an even better place. They took us up to a place called Sidi Bish.
That's in February.
Yeah, couldn't tell you when it was. It didn't seem. We'd been there a few weeks. Then we went up. This was a few miles outside Alexandria. That was really, really delightful. And there, I got the rewards I'd been promised. When my job was, IC driving instruction, and I was told I'd got to learn to drive. And what we actually did. We went round the battery in the morning asking if people wanted to book cinema tickets. I couldn't drive, so I sat in the back with this list of, and we were going round the cinemas with various people taking over and we were being over in the driving instruction. And the chap who was teaching them would swap them over. And it was a ride into Alexandria and back and a bit of manoeuvring on the what bit of desert there was. Was a very pleasant way of spending the morning. Afternoons, most of it, we visited the Navy and other regiments. I spent some time where I did get nailed for a bit of work with the 10 people who had been told secretly we were going to support in the next thing, County of London Yeomanry. And they said, go, he took me over, Major Burgle took me over, introduced me to the Colonel, who I was told was a director of the Bank of England. His crew, the gunner was either a barrister or some top-class solicitor. The other was as he explained it, something in the city. And the driver was also something in the city. And what the idea was, if we had to use this tank, I'd have to take the place of the signaller, gunlander. I hated it. This damn thing turning round, if you put your hand out the wrong way, you'd get it, you know, with the turret turning, the ammunition, a lot of the ammunition was static, in other words, the turret turned, so you had to know where to put your hand out to get this stuff out. But anyway, I spent some afternoons with them to get to know. But then, visiting the Navy was delightful. You could buy woodbines, which came in tins, which we couldn't get. They've always provided us with tins. One I remember particularly, the most hospitable ship was HMS Uranus. Cool, remember them. They were really, I suppose if I was being funny, I'd say they put the boat out for us, but they were really, they used to come back and we'd put on a bit of gun thing, which they thought was utter rubbish. They couldn't understand anybody being on land and standing about waiting to be shot at. The only thing you had to be careful of, you didn't ask them what those two big ships were, which looked as though they were well down in the water. Because that was HMS, the Queen Elizabeth, which the Italian frogmen had sneaked into the harbour and sunk. And you learn it, the hospitality had ceased, if you were, and they instantly asked what they doing there. They also, it was very interesting, French battleships were there, they were magnificent, these, big, you know, really, they looked French, sloping bows and, you know, but the Navy didn't like them, they thought they should be out there. But it was a delightful place. Lots of coffee. I remember all the discussion we got, and then talking to the team afterwards. 10 years they'd played together, and never had, except for the odd couple, team changes. Don't ask me how they'd wondered it. They didn't go to sea. That was a naval team. 10 years. But it was, they call it a fattening. Major Burke's thing was fattening up camp. And as I say, I had this, literally, let me... well, it was really a do nothing, you know.
Did you actually learn to drive yourself?
No, I was far too young. I was driven a bit into Brook, but that was because, you see, if you can changing down gear with the truck, with an army truck. And if
why?
They didn't have what we call synchro mesh, which is still a mystery to me, and you had to get it in the right speed and revs. But they used to say, we used to occasionally go up the, if I was bending the wire, so my method was to change up and then stop. Then you could get back in new from the start again. But quite frankly, if somebody else would do it, it didn't interest me greatly. I did have my last run in, with my friend Jack Gore, who was then something to do with the quartermaster's things. And he reminded me. He came on a check and the hut, not a hut, it was a tent island with all drivers. And one driver was a 7-pound hammer missing. And Jack found this 7-pound hammer missing and with great glee came to me and said, do you remember the Barani knot? Yes. He said, well, I've got news for you. You're in charge of this tent. And I said, what do you mean? Oh, well, he said, you know what happened to me when you got a bloody so-and-so rubbing. Blue, I suddenly tumbled. Of course, Jack had got nailed for the knot when he was 60 miles away. So, this was an idea of a joke, you see. And then I got charged for this 7-pound hammer when I came at the end of my army career. About 2 and 6. He had me. I can't remember the tricks I tried to play on him, but I can always remember his glee when he nailed me for this. One of the drivers, nothing to do with me, of course, but I was in charge of the tent, and he introduced this law that Major, whatever his name was, going into Alexandria, great times, the tram, who was it? Kolotikos, Greek restaurant, beautiful. Petit Coin de France, a French restaurant, if you could afford it, that was a bit dearer.
How did you get on with the Egyptians?
Oh, they tolerated us. But the tram was there. Coming back at night on the tram was the one of the things that I think all the chaps there remember. They told the conductor, the chief thing, we were fairly honest, but a lot of you'd always find some clown on the tram. When the conductor came along, he'd say, Farouk will pay, King of Egypt, or Churchill will pay. I know one or two of the, what to say, the tougher conductors, some of them would dodge it, they weren't going to tackle drunken Englishmen. But some of them said, oh well, you pay and then get the money back from Mr. Churchill. This was the sort of, you know, it was all a bit of a riotous. Sometimes they'd stop the tram if there were too many of them obstructing, so we're not going on till you pay. And they'd have a tremendous argument about this. But it was all a. It was a very pleasant camp.
He said they tolerated you. What did you think of the Egyptians, though?
Most of us treated them, what should I say, we tolerated them. It was their country. We felt it was their country. But there was, you would see quite a lot of people did hassle them. Which some of us thought was a bit unfair. I mean, I've seen people kick if somebody had out of the way, just kick them out of the way and things like that. Well, maybe they'd have a computer to have no source of income. We did have one, I don't know if it was Bill Hutton or Frank Bush, had some friends who were bankers in Alexandria, invited us to dinner one night. One of our chaps, who I don't know which one, made the faux pas that I heard was in the army. Beautiful debt servants, the whole lot, proper dinner table, china, glass, all beautiful. And then they were talking about experiences, and some lady said to one of my friends, Frank Bush and their own people, well, you fire these guns, isn't it awful when you think you might hit somebody? He said, how do you feel if he shells out the flight of monster? You saw people fall, and like a shot, this chap used one of the expressions at the time, if I could use some bad language, chuff the fuck, he says. And, I can feel myself now. The silence around that table was absolute awful till some kind person had another drink, someone. But that was the expression at the time. Everybody was chuffed, and that was especially. But very pleasant interview before they took us back to start the.
You moved from there in March, 24th of March, to Ben Youssef.
Benny Youssef, yes, that was a nice. Well, that was something. That wasn't pleasant. Where we'd been before, but this was quite close to the pyramids, which of course was made it not so sad, all romantic. A few miles out of Cairo, going to Cairo at night, which of course that was absolutely splendid. The officers would invite, they'd often have dues where all the NCOs were, I say invited, if they invited you, it was a case of whatever else you'd thought of doing, it was gone. But the places where there were quite good hotels where you could mix. Shepherds we couldn't get into, that was officers only.
And what were these parties like?
Oh, nice dinner, a lot of drink, and then where you'd get on to Philly, you'd let your hair down a bit and tell the officers, not all the home truths, we were fairly well behaved, but the fact was someone they paid, But they were very pleasant nights. Had some nice things in Cairo. The cinema with the roof that used to open during the evening when it was pleasant. The whole room could slide back. Open air cinema where the waiters would come on and drink. Very pleasant.
What sort of films would they have on?
What was the big film we saw at the day? I've forgotten. There was one big film. One of the Follies films was there before it was in England. The Go one, it was a magnificent place, air conditioned. And have it like it is here now, they had an interval when you'd go in and.
Were films very popular with the troops?
Quite popular, yeah. There I was made up to one sergeant, and then I knew I'd arrived because Charles Westlake, my predecessor, as battery commander's assistant, had only been a bombardier. But then, of course, things had changed again. We'd lost all our high school, we'd lost Charles Westlake, Dennis Middleton. George Pearson. They'd all gone to Octo.
Had you thought of any possibility of a commission?
Not at that time. But they'd all gone. As I say, when I was made up, I was quite. I was called in one. I always remember it was around one lunchtime and told her. The battery clerk said, he didn't say it, he said, Peter.